Hello, patrons. As I've mentioned a few times now, I'm currently in the process of packing up the home and moving to Ireland. And this is the last podcast that I'll be uploading before we actually do move. The date of our move is the 3rd of November, and so right now, as you can imagine, I'm sitting in a room full of boxes, and we need to get my laptop and microphone loaded into one of the last still open boxes so that we can get, you know, all packed up and ready to finally go. Consequently, I'm going to be offline for a little while because we don't actually have a home over there where we're going. But obviously getting one sorted out is a priority for us, and we aim to be in one within a week at most. So as soon as we are, obviously I'm going to get everything plugged back in again, and we'll be right back in your ears very soon for business as usual. I'm telling you this just in case, you know, you leave comments or stuff on Patreon and whatnot and I don't reply. It's not because I'm, you know, being ignorant or anything. It's simply because I can't read it because I'm offline. I still don't have a smartphone. I know it's silly, isn't it? But I just don't like them. I can't help it. Anyway, I'll just shut up chit-chatting because I've obviously got lots of things to do here, packing and whatnot. So we'll just get down to business with episode 6 of Underwood and Flinch Underground. Oh, my goodness. Now, remember last time? Damo Sullivan woke up in a hospital morgue to find himself a vampire. He killed the orderly who pulled him out of the refrigerator drawer, and seeing as he was phenomenally peckish, he murdered him. He then took his clothes and car and headed out to Almacena. His destination is Casa Underwood, but the coming dawn can play havoc with your plans when you're a vampire, as you're about to find out in episode 6 of Underwood and Flinch Underground, a novel written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience and does contain scenes of violence and rather harsh language. Listener discretion is advised. Episode 6. The sky was brightening as Damo drove off the highway and onto the road into Almacena. Ahead of him, the church and castle rose into view above the patchwork of terracotta roofs in the distance. Casa Underwood, as David called it, was about 15 minutes' drive out of the other side of town. It was clear he wouldn't be able to get to the house before the sun was up. A change of plan was called for. He had to go home, back to the little house he shared with Ange, his off-and-on girlfriend of the last 2 years. How would she react when he started barricading the bedroom against the sunlight, closing all the shutters, pulling all the curtains? How was he going to tell her what had happened to him? Could he even? Ange prided herself on being a down-to-earth, no-frills, what-you-see-is-what-you-get type person. She was unpretentious, which he liked, and great fun in the sack, too. But she wasn't the sharpest tool in the box. Most of the time, that didn't bother him, but today was definitely not most of the time. He'd considered alternatives to going home. He knew a lot of people, but the only ones he could really trust were Keith, whose home was now ashes, and Hodge, who was dead. In other words, there was no alternative. He could either go home to Ange, or he could park up somewhere and wait for the sun to burn him alive. It was a tough call, but Ange won. He pulled up outside the house, a narrow two up, two down on a terraced street that was built when most of the traffic was of the horse and cart variety. Ange had bought it through Lydia Flinch when she and her then-boyfriend had left southeast London to start a new life in Spain 3 years ago, The boyfriend, Jeff, was a web designer. He'd figured he could make a living freelancing online and selling his services to local businesses in and around Almacena. He'd been wrong on both counts, and within a year, he and Ange had split up and he'd gone back to Catford. Ange loved the life here too much to go back home. She made a living selling her house cleaning services to other Brits who had bought homes here but lived back in the UK, renting their homes out through internet holiday home sites. She wasn't getting rich, but she was making ends meet, especially with Damo picking up Jeff's half of the mortgage repayments, sharing the cost of groceries and so on. They weren't a match made in heaven, but they'd been happy enough. But all that would end now, he thought, as he looked out of the window at the house. He'd have to leave her. That wouldn't be easy.
Just lie, he told himself. Tell her you're going home for a bit. Family business. Pack a bag and just slip out to Backjack.
He got out. Then he realised he didn't have a door key anymore and rang the bell. He rang it 5 times before she finally opened the door. Keeping her body concealed behind the door, she peered around it to see who it was. On recognising him, her expression darkened.
"Where the fuck have you been? I've been worried sick." "I'll tell you in a minute. Just let me in, will you?"
He pushed at the door. She was a big girl, some would say fat, and the door wasn't moving an inch if she didn't want it to.
"What are you wearing that get-up? You been to a doctor's and nurse's party?" "No, I've been in feckin' hospital."
He glanced to the end of the street where the sunlight was now touching the roofs of the houses.
"Now let me in for fuck's sake."
She yielded the door and he pushed inside and closed it behind him.
"Oh, Christ, it's the pub, isn't it? You were in Lorena when it caught fire. The whole town's been talking about it. I've been trying to ring you, but all I ever get is voicemail. You're such a bloody arsehole, Damo. What happened? Are you all right? Didn't you even think about calling me?"
He held up a hand.
"Would you just shut up for a minute and let me get in the bleeding door?"
Ange shut up. She was looking over his face for injuries. He nodded.
"Okay, yeah, I was in Lorena. But no, I wasn't hurt." "Well, then what was she in hospital for?"
She was right in his face and he waved her back.
"Please, Ange, just get back and let me get inside, okay?"
She shook her head, turned and started down the hall for the kitchen, her flip-flops flip-flopping on the tiles.
"All I can say is it better not be anything to do with another woman or I'll put you straight back in a bloody hospital, sunshine."
She was wearing only the T-shirt she slept in and her knickers. Her ample bottom rolled as she walked, sashaying from side to side in a manner that brought a tingle to Damo's loins. He took some comfort in that. At least one part of him was unchanged.
"I was in a fight." "Oh yeah, with who?" "The people who started the fire." "And who was that then?" "The Russian Mafia."
Ange stopped in the doorway, effectively barring any other traffic, and turned back to him.
"Do what?"
"That's right," he said, enjoying her amazement.
"I was in a fight with the Russian Mafia. Guns, grenades, like Call of Feckin' Duty it was. It'll be on the news, sure." "I ain't seen the news, have I? I've only just bleeding got up." "So, you're serious?"
"Yeah."
"Well, so what happened? Did you get shot somewhere?"
"No."
"We don't look very beat up. What was you in hospital for?"
He ran upstairs, calling behind him.
"Yeah, wouldn't believe me." "I already don't believe you, so you might as well keep going,"
she shouted after him.
"Come on, tell us what happened." "No."
Ange could hear him running around upstairs and the sound of window shutters closing. No doubt he was planning on spending the day in bed, sleeping it off.
"What was it? Pills, booze, or a mixture of both?"
She went upstairs after him.
"You really want to know?"
he called from the bedroom.
"Yeah." "Okay."
He stopped dragging a small wardrobe in front of the window and turned to her as she came in.
"I was bitten by a vampire." "What, you mean you were necking with some bleeding goth and she gave you a love bite? You dirty..." "No, I mean I was bitten by a vampire. A real, honest-to-God, spawn of Satan vampire."
Ange, who could see he didn't have a love bite, or any kind of bite on his neck, frowned.
What do you mean?
I don't think I could be any feckin' clearer, Ange. A vampire, you know, with the fangs.
But you mean a bat? They don't have them bats in Spain.
No, I don't mean a bat. I mean the other kind of vampire.
What, you mean like Dracula?
Damo pointed at her.
Correct.
For a moment, Ange was silent, watching his face and waiting for the punchline. When it didn't come, she laughed anyway.
Dracula? Or was it more like that Buffy bird, or the other one in Twilight? Did she sparkle before or after the pills?
I didn't take any pills, Ange, he said, dragging the wardrobe the rest of the way in front of the window.
And she didn't sparkle. Oh, so it was a bird then?
Yeah,
he said, climbing over the bed and coming up against her where she blocked the doorway.
But there was nothing romantic about it. The bitch was fucking killing me. Now, if you don't mind, I want to get all the curtains and shutters closed downstairs.
What for? It's bloody morning. And what's she been doing dragging that wardrobe in front of the window?
I told you, Ange, I've been bitten by a vampire, and that means that now I'm a vampire too.
Well, you ain't got no holes in your neck.
I know. Life's full of little bonuses like that, isn't it? But nevertheless, if I don't get them curtains closed, the sunlight's gonna light me up like fucking Guy Fawkes.
She continued to bar the way, waiting for his serious demeanour to crack into laughter. She poked his chest in an attempt to speed the process.
You're having a laugh, ain't ya? You're always taking a piss, you. Winding me up with your stories. You're a fucking vampire, my arse. Really, Ange?
He took her by the shoulders and looked her straight in the eyes.
Believe me, I swear to God, I am a vampire.
He was expecting a fresh jab in the chest, maybe a shove, but surprisingly, she seemed to relax. Her wide, sarcastic grin melted from her face, and her eyes seemed to glaze over.
You're a vampire, she repeated.
Her voice sounded sleepy, her words matter-of-fact, like she was stating her details to a police officer.
Yeah, do you believe me? 'Cause if you believe me, it's going to make the next 10 hours or so a whole lot fucking easier.
I believe you.
Damo frowned.
Are you all right there, Ange?
Ange said nothing. She just stared into his eyes, her face slack. He didn't have the time for this. He had to get those blinds closed.
Look, get out of my way, will you?
To his surprise, she stepped aside immediately. He looked at her, confused by her compliance, before hurrying downstairs to go through the house, closing blinds and shutters and pulling all the curtains closed. As he was locking the back door, he began to wonder where she was.
Ange?
He called.
Yes?
Came the reply from upstairs. He went back to the bedroom to find her exactly where he'd left her, still with that slack expression on her face.
What's the matter with you? You're not in shock or something, are you?
No. I'm fine.
Okay, well, that's grand then. Now, listen, I've closed the house up against the sun, yeah? I gotta do that or I'm toast, seriously.
You're toast.
Yeah, exactly. So don't open the curtains or shutters or nothing, okay?
Don't open the curtains or shutters, Ange repeated numbly.
That's it. Good. I don't care what you do with yourself today, but I'm going to bed now. I'm gonna shut the door and I don't want you coming in and disturbing me, okay? Not until after the sun's gone down.
He expected a barrage of sarcastic abuse. Instead, she simply said,
Don't open the curtains. Don't disturb you.
Damo couldn't quite figure out what was wrong with her. She was never this agreeable. She looked like she was in a trance.
Are you on something, Ange?
No.
Well, then what's with the weird act? Is this some kind of fucking head game punishment shit? I thought the devastating bleeding news about me being a vampire would get a bit more of a reaction than this. But sure, fine, that suits me.
She said nothing. He put a hand on her shoulder.
Look, I gotta sleep, Ange. I've had a fucking weird night and I gotta process it somehow. So, can you just leave me alone and let me sleep till the sun goes down, all right? And we'll talk about it then.
All right, darling. Do you want me to bring you a cup of tea?
What?
When I wake you later, do you want me to bring you a cup of tea?
Damo was unsure whether she was being sarcastic.
Are you taking the piss here?
No. You always like a cup of tea when you wake up. Two sugars. Strong. Builder's tea.
Yeah, I know how I like me fucking tea, Ange, but... Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I'll have tea, thanks.
All right, love.
So what are you going to do all day?
I've got jobs. Couple of houses to do.
And you won't say nothing about this to anyone now, will you? I mean, about me being a vampire.
You don't want me to?
Damo's eyebrows knitted. She seemed to be asking in all sincerity.
No, I don't want you to. I'm saying don't tell anyone, yeah? Go about your business as normal and don't mention me to anyone.
All right, darling. Now you go to bed and I'll get ready for work. And I promise not to disturb you if I can help it.
Damo hadn't intended to tell her what had happened to him. He thought she'd never believe him, and yet here she was, utterly believing and completely compliant. He'd never seen her like this before. He nodded slowly.
Right so, thanks.
She smiled.
That's all right, Damie. Night-night.
Dreamily, she sashayed to the door. He watched her bottom and again enjoyed the tingle in his loins. For a moment, he considered asking Miss Complete Compliance if she wouldn't mind hanging around a while and doing a few other things that he might want. He had a suspicion that she would. But he wasn't in the mood, not after the 24 hours he'd just been through. Later, when the sun was down, maybe he'd see if she was still as agreeable. And if she was, well, if you're going to leave a woman forever... At least leave her with a smile on her face.
Sun's down.
The voice sang into a dream where it had no place. Damo opened his eyes to see Ange sitting on the bed holding a mug of tea. She smiled and held it up for him to see.
All right, darling. I bought you a cuppa like you wanted.
His stomach responded to the message with a dull ache. He was hungry, but not for tea. He did his best to ignore the feeling and sat up.
Thanks.
He took the mug and looked at the brown liquid warily, then sniffed it like it might be laced with poison. He felt no instinctive revulsion. He took a sip and swallowed. It was good. He took another sip and said,
Well, that's a blessing at least.
What is?
Tea. I can still drink it.
Because you're a vampire.
Her tone carried neither sarcasm nor doubt. She might just as easily have told him he was a pub doorman.
Yeah, that's right.
He sat back against the headboard.
You don't seem at all surprised by that, Ange.
It's what you told me.
Damo noticed she still had that dreaminess about her, like she was almost sleepwalking. That morning, when she had suddenly gone this way, he'd been tired and hadn't minded. If anything, he'd been grateful because it meant he could just go to bed without getting interrogated about what he'd been doing since he last saw her. But now, it felt all wrong, like she'd been replaced by a pod person from Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, but isn't that a bit fucking strange to you? A bit unbelievable?
You told me.
Jesus, Ange...
He put the mug down on the bedside table and put a hand on her shoulder.
You say it like it's nothing. It's not nothing. It's fucking terrifying. I'm not human anymore. Do you understand?
I understand. You're not human anymore.
The same tone, slack, listless. He looked at her aghast.
Do you not even care?
I care.
Well, you don't fucking sound like it. I died, Ange. I died and I came back and then I killed a man.
The confession was out before he knew he was going to say it. He regretted it, but when he saw it had seemingly made no impression on her, he went on.
I killed a hospital orderly. I drank his fucking blood.
She stared at him silently.
Ange.
His voice was quiet, concerned.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm all right.
You're not all right. You're not normal. You should be angry or frightened or shit fucking scared, but you're not. You're just sitting there like a fucking Stepford wife. She even wanted to ask me if I liked a cup of fucking tea.
Do you?
Christ, could... Ange, could you just be normal?
The effect was immediate.
So what? Do you like the tea or not? Because I'm not making you another one.
What?
Damo's face was a knot of incomprehension.
I said I am not making you another one, you lazy bastard. Honestly, I don't know why I part with you. I really don't.
She was normal. He told her to be normal, and now she was normal.
Ange! What?
He looked her in the eyes.
Sit on the bed.
She sat down, her eyes fixed to his, as if awaiting further instruction.
Stand up.
She stood up. Damo smiled. It was like he'd put her under a spell. Whatever he told her to do, she would do. But how had he done it? He thought back to that morning. He told her he was a vampire and she hadn't believed him, thought he was joking. He'd been serious with her. He'd urged her to believe him. And then she'd become all compliant. Urged. That was the key word. He'd urged her to believe him and she had. And just now he'd urged her to be normal and she'd reverted back to her normal self. So did this mean he could just instantly hypnotise people by just urging them to do his bidding? The ache in his stomach swelled and he closed his eyes, willing it away. To no avail. He looked up at Ange and wondered if she'd mind if he drank her blood. He suspected she wouldn't, not in the state she was in. The thought pained him. He didn't love her, but he was fond of her. She was his partner, and he certainly didn't want to kill her. He didn't want to kill anyone.
Oh, Jesus, Ange,
he said, pressing his hand to his forehead.
I'm not well. You should go. Go away somewhere.
Where do you want me to go?
She asked obediently.
Anywhere. I'm dangerous, see? You shouldn't be around me.
Where should I be?
Where should you be? You should be here, and I should be here. I should still be feckin' human, and you should be bouncing up and down on my fucking human cock like there's no tomorrow. And then maybe later we'd go out for a pint and a laugh with Keith and Hodge, but we can't do none of any of that shit because everything's fucked up now beyond all recognition. Hodge is dead, Lorraine is burned down, I'm a fucking vampire, and you're my fucking slave, all ready to lie down beside me and let me fucking murder you.
But do you want me to lie down beside you?
No, I don't want that. But the part of me that's not me anymore wants it, you know? There's a part of me that wants to open your veins and tuck into you like your Christmas fucking dinner.
She said nothing. Obviously, he hadn't suggested a clear enough course of action. His stomach ached. The pain was getting stronger. He wondered if he might just take a little of her blood. Could he do that? Could he trust himself to stop? He hadn't with the orderly, but what if he controlled the bleeding in advance? He thought for a moment, his brain flickering through images of needles, knives, and other means of cutting and puncturing. Then he hit on what he thought was a workable solution. He got out of bed and started for the door.
Come on, I got an idea. Come with me.
He led her downstairs to the kitchen, where he went straight to the knife drawer. He took out the large cook's knife and tested the sharpness with his thumb. Satisfied that it was up to the task, he then went to the cupboard where they kept pots and bowls and took out a 1 litre Pyrex measuring jug. Lastly, he took the first aid kit from under the sink and checked there were bandages and Steri-Strips. There were. He put the first aid kit down with the knife and jug on the countertop and turned to Ange. He fixed her eyes with his and said slowly and clearly,
Ange, I want you to do something for me. Something that's not very nice, but something that's going to help me a whole fucking lot. Will you do it for me, darling?
She nodded.
I will.
All right. I want you to take this knife and make a small cut in your wrist. Now, I can't do it. I don't trust myself to do as I ought to. Be careful now. Don't go too deep. Just a shallow cut, but deep enough to, well, bleed a bit, you know? And then I want you to hold your wrist over the measuring jug. And when it's full, you and me are going to wash and close the cut and bandage you up, okay?
She nodded.
Okay.
He took 3 steps back from her. His heart was pounding like he'd swallowed a fistful of top-grade amphetamines. "When you're ready, let's do it."
Ange came straight to the countertop and picked up the knife. She held her arm over the jug and pressed the blade against the underside of her wrist. Without a moment's hesitation, she sliced slowly and firmly across the flesh. In the wake of the blade, a crimson line opened, and even before it had cleared her arm, blood began to flow. Damo watched, frozen by conflicting senses of horror and ravening, as it began to splatter into the jug. The blood rose quickly, too quickly. His inertia broke and he went to her, turning her arm so the cut was facing the ceiling. Her limp wrist fell back, pulling the skin tight and the wound wide open. Blood spurted upwards.
"Oh, Christ, Ange, you've gone too deep!"
He tried to push her hand back up, but his hands were now slippery with blood. He pinched the wound at an angle, and blood spurted onto his face and into his open mouth. He leaned forward, intending, he thought, to attempt some kind of first aid, but instead he put his mouth to the cut and started drinking. He couldn't stop himself. The blood gushed over his tongue and into his throat. Delicious, intoxicating, overwhelming. He closed his eyes, and the world and all its cares melted away into nothing. Damo stood in the shower watching the last incarnadine swirls of Ange's blood wash down the drain. She was dead. She died without a scream, a word, or a whimper. He hadn't been fully conscious of her passing. He'd been too absorbed in devouring her blood to notice, too busy killing her when he should have been trying to save her. Even when she'd lost so much blood that she could no longer stand, he hadn't broken off from his feeding. He'd fallen down with her to the floor, slipping on tiles slick with blood, her wrist to his mouth, drinking, drinking, drinking until the flow of blood finally slowed to nothing. He'd opened his eyes to look straight into hers, lifeless, and looking at him as if waiting for her next instructions. With his hunger now satiated, whatever it was in him that had allowed her to die had gone, leaving him exposed to the full horror of what he had done. It was like the vampire had finally made way for the human that it had locked outside the mind they shared, and that man had now awoken to find himself lying in a pool of blood on his kitchen floor, beside his girlfriend's corpse, his mouth to her fatal injury, her life's blood in his stomach, soaking into his clothes and dripping from various surfaces all around him. He'd lost it then. Horror and grief had overwhelmed him, pushing him away from her and up against the washing machine, there to scream and cry into the hand he held tight against his mouth until he managed to get himself under control. And then, shakily, he'd got to his feet. On standing, he'd noticed the Pyrex jug. It was half full of blood and sitting in a sticky pool of the same. His initial impulse had been to grab it and hurl it at the wall, but on touching it, he'd stopped himself. It was still warm.
"Drink it," a voice in his head suggested. "Drink it now, or save it in the fridge for later."
He closed his eyes. Jesus, he was already having household management ideas about what to do with leftover blood. Mrs. Beaton for vampires. He pushed the Pyrex jug aside and looked down at Ange. What was he going to do with her? The obvious answer presented itself immediately. Do nothing. She's dead in a pool of her own blood, a knife at her side with her fingerprints on it. The coroner would be able to confirm the cut was self-inflicted. Okay, his body had made impressions in the blood and he'd tracked it around the kitchen, but he could clean that up. But then there was the amount of blood on the floor and the fact that it fell somewhat short of the amount she'd actually lost.
He reached for the Pyrex jug and added her leftover blood to the pool on the floor. It didn't make much difference. The pool was still considerably short of the full amount. But once it had dried, would the cops be able to tell? Maybe, maybe not. Either way, he didn't plan on being here when the body was eventually found. He'd stripped off then and dropped his bloody clothes into a heap. He'd washed the Pyrex jug, his hands and feet, and then, from under the sink, he'd taken a rubbish sack into which he put his clothes before using a mop to clean up all bloody impressions of himself while still leaving plenty of blood on the floor. Then he hurried upstairs to the shower. Now, he shut the water off and got out to towel himself dry. All the while, his mind was going over what had happened and what he was going to do next. He had to go to Casa Underwood. What he did when he got there depended on who he found inside. If it was Lydia, he'd give the bitch the kicking she had coming to her. If it was Underwood, he'd seek his help. And if it was David, well, thank God he had a serving of blood in the fridge. Of course, they could all be there together, or any variation of pairs. He'd just have to meet the situation as he found it. He wrapped the towel around his waist and went into the bedroom. He pulled on some fresh clothes, jeans and a hooded top, just in case he needed to remain incognito anywhere. Then he took Angie's iPhone from the bedside table and checked the charge. It was good for the rest of the day. He pocketed it, along with her house keys, some cash and the keys to the orderly's car. He went to the front door and peeked outside. Kids were playing in the street as usual, and the nutty lad who ran up and down, pretending to be a motor scooter, was in full flight and voice. Some people, parents probably, sat chatting in doorways, talking over the day's events and watching the kids with amusement. He waited until the moped lad drew their attention in the opposite direction, then, picking up his sack of bloody clothes, quickly slipped out of the house and into the orderly's car. With his hood up, he started the engine, shrank down into the driver's seat, and drove away. The gates to the estate of Casa Underwood were open, and Damo drove through onto the long, winding drive and switched off the headlights. The sky was overcast, the light from a scant sliver of crescent moon barely touching the olive groves that stretched out before him. But Damo's new eyes saw everything clearly. He got out of the car and looked up to the top of the gently sloping hill where he could just make out the white walls of the house through the cypress trees. There was a faint glow of artificial light gilding the tops of the trees. Someone was in. But who? He didn't care. Whoever it was, the only way to deal with them was head on. He got back into the car and drove on. He had planned for all kinds of contingencies, but the sight that greeted him as he drove through the gates of the house itself genuinely surprised him. A removal struck.
"What the fuck is this?" he whispered to himself.
He parked the car and went over to the truck. The driver's cab was empty. He came around it to see the front door of the house was wide open. From inside drifted Spanish pop music that changed to the voice of a radio DJ as he approached. He stopped at the door and looked inside. On the staircase opposite, two men in overalls had taken down the portrait of Underwood and were wrapping it using a huge roll of bubble wrap. They noticed him and nodded a vague acknowledgement without pausing in their work.
"Oye," said Damo. "Habla inglés."
Both men shook their heads, so Damo addressed them in Spanish.
"At a Flinch's home,"
they responded with shrugs and blank looks.
What about Underwood, the man in the portrait? Have you seen him?"
"No, the company sent us out here to pack this stuff up," said one of them.
"Why?"
"Why else? They're moving."
"Moving where?"
"You don't know?"
"I've been away. I was hoping to see the owner. Is anyone around?"
Not now. There was a man and a woman here earlier marking the stuff up for us to pack, but they're gone now.
Do you know who they were?
No, but it wasn't the man in the portrait. The two men laughed.
Would you have an address where the stuff's being sent to?
You need to speak to El Jefe, Manuel. He's through there, in the other room.
The man pointed the way. Damo thanked him and went to the room indicated. Another man in overalls, smoking a cigarette, was checking items on a clipboard.
Manuel?
Asked Damo.
Si,
the man replied, his voice husky from a lifetime of cigarettes. Damo addressed him in Spanish.
I'm looking for the owners of the house. The Flinches, do you know where they are?
No. You from the British company?
British company? No. I'm a friend. I'm looking for a Senor Flinch or Underwood.
I don't know anything about that. We've spoken to no one besides the lawyer. So if there's nothing else, I have work to be doing. We have to get all this stuff packed and ready to go by morning.
He was about to walk past him when Damo caught him lightly by the arm. Manuel was about to tell him to get his hand off, but then his eyes met Damo's, and his annoyance, as well as the reason for it, faded in a heartbeat. Damo smiled to see that he'd successfully and effortlessly brought Manuel under the same uncanny mesmeric influence as he had Ange earlier.
What do you know about the owners of this house?
Nothing. A lawyer phoned our company, said he wanted the house packed up for removal. Priority job.
And you're shipping it out to England?
No, not us. That is the British company. They're coming first thing tomorrow to pick it up.
Do you have the address in England where it's all being sent to?
Yes.
Manuel held up the clipboard and pointed to an address at the top of the page. Damo read it.
Bloomsbury Square, London, eh?
Damo took out Ange's phone and took a picture of the address.
The stuff you're taking, is it all furniture and stuff, or is it like clothes and smaller items?
Anything the lawyer marked, we pack. Furniture, clothes, everything.
Any women's stuff? You know, dresses, bras, things like that?
No, no dresses, no bras.
Damo scratched the stubble on his cheek. So, no Lydia, which meant that this move must be the plan of Underwood, or Flinch, or both. It made sense. If Michelle or Melanie had spilled the beans about Underwood, David, Lydia, or even him, the cops could be out here and sniffing around soon. True, he was supposed to be dead, but he didn't die with a name tag on. If Michelle had talked, it was just a matter of time before they'd be knocking on Ange's door. He looked again at the picture he'd taken of the London address. Underwood and Flinch had the right idea, and hopefully they had a spare bed too. He turned back to Manuel.
Okay, well, thanks for your help, mate. I'll be off now. Good luck with the move. Oh, and forget you ever saw me, yeah?
I forget you, said Manuel listlessly.
Good man. Damo cocked a thumb over his shoulder. You better get back to it now. Time is money, eh?
Time is money,
said Manuel, unmoving, his eyes ever fixed on Damo's. Clearly he needed a more concrete instruction.
Manuel, Damo said firmly, get back to work, mate. Oh, and be your normal self, okay?
At that, Manuel came back to himself. He looked at Damo, slightly surprised, before walking past him in the direction he'd been going earlier, forgetting about him as soon as he was gone from his view. Damo went outside and got back into the car. He drove to the gates and looked back at the house in the rear-view mirror.
So you bastards are leaving the country, and you think you can leave me behind, do you?
He smiled and shook his head.
Well, you'd be mistaken there, lads.
He drove back to Ange's, where he went directly upstairs. He went into the guest room, which they also used as an office. He went to the desk, sat down and flicked on the computer. He then started pulling out drawers until he located his passport and the old wallet that he kept a stash of sterling in. He checked it. He had £146 in cash. He pocketed both items and then went online where he googled last-minute flights to London. He found a seat on a flight from Seville to Gatwick. He booked himself aboard, printed his ticket, and ran downstairs. At the front door, he stopped. He had been going to go straight out, but his heightened sense of hearing picked up an unusual sound coming from the kitchen. He turned and looked back to where Ange lay. A local cat she liked to feed had come in through the window and was licking at the pool of blood. He considered going in and shooing it out, but he realised its appetite would help to explain the shortfall of blood surrounding her. He then allowed himself to look at Ange. She lay with her head towards him. Her hair clasp had been shaken by her fall, and her blonde hair, spotted with splashes of blood, had come loose. If she'd been alive, she'd have seen to that immediately. She always liked to have her hair pulled tightly back. At that, a wave of self-loathing, guilt and despair suddenly threatened to consume him. He fell back against the front door, tears springing to his eyes and a choked sob escaping his lips.
"I'm sorry, Ange. I'm so fucking sorry.
He closed his throat on saying any more. He waited until the moment had passed, took a deep breath, then pushed himself back onto his feet and wiped his eyes.
"Goodbye, darling,"
he said, turning away from her for the last time. He opened the door and left for London. And so, listeners, Damo is heading for London, where he believes Underwood and Flinch will have a spare room waiting for him and an empty seat by the fireside. Oh, but little does he know, listeners. Little does he know. Join me next time for episode 7 of Underwood and Flinch Underground. The music you're listening to is Ahmad Armour by Farid Farjad, courtesy of Taraneh Records, specialists in Persian music. Buy the track online at Amazon or iTunes, or simply follow the links on my websites, MikeBennettAuthor.com and UnderwoodAndFlinch.com. Other music on the podcast was by Andrew Rothman.
Of the month.
Yes, free ebook of the month. Well done if you've stayed all the way to the end. There is a free, in fact, there's two free ebooks of the month this month. From Saturday, the 31st of October 2015, to Wednesday, November the 4th, two of my books will be free in the Amazon Kindle store. They are Underwood and Flinch Resurrection, that's part one of the Chronicles, the first half of the original podcast, and The Complete Hall of Mirrors, Tales of Horror and the Grotesque, which has never been given away for free before. So if you haven't got either of those ebooks, then do please nip over to the Amazon Kindle store and grab yours today. All I ask in return, as always, for this special Halloween promotion is some stars, 5 is a good number, and a few kind words, in the form of a review. It doesn't have to be an essay, just like, "I liked this book, I thought it was good," or something a bit more elaborate than that, perhaps, but you get the idea, I'll shut up.
Mike Bennett, author.com.
This podcast has been brought to you today by you, my sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on is as a result of your contributions. And so verily I say, ladies and gentlemen, you truly do rock.